Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Aha! Yep, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey tennis?
Little piss, my foot on his thigh.
With a chuckle.
No.
Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Edmonds is a total wazzup of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hello friends and welcome once again to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we're making our way through Alan's From the Oast House Series 2. I'm Adam Brooks and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Let's call him Jeff, as I don't like his real name, which is Jez.
Nick Alder.
Imagine if you showed enough phone to King Henry VIII, it'd blow his mind.
And Tom Stab.
I don't know how to follow that, to be honest. But I'll try. I wouldn't say anything as cheesy as she completes me, but she certainly finishes me off.
It's good, but Nick wins that one, definitely.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
It does. So, yes, welcome to episode 142, believe it or not,
fucking
of Monkey
hell.
Tennis, where we'll be talking about episode or chapter 7 and 8 of From the Oast House Series 2, namely Time Travel and Katarina. But before we get onto that, we like to start each episode with a little tidbit of the promotion that's been done around From the Oast House. In this case, an interview Steve Coogan gave to Empire magazine, which Tom Dark is going to talk us through the finer points of.
Yeah, I mean, this was a very interesting interview. It's about 20 minutes long. And what I thought was quite funny is that the main thrust of this interview was very much Coogan talking about Oast House, even though it was the Empire Film Podcast and he's got the film about Richard III that's just come out. So he's done other promo recently, which has been focused around that film, but not when doing the Empire Film Podcast. I think because we all know they're huge Alan fans and have supported Oast House and This Time and stuff in the past. Anyway, so it opens with Coogan talking about that he's either in work mode or down tools mode. And he says to Chris from Empire, I'm in down tools mode right now, which I thought was hilarious because surely you're in the middle of a promo run to promote a brand new project. You should be in down tools mode. It should very much be the work section.
Yeah, pick up those tools and get to work.
Yeah. So there's a bit of insight that they recorded Oast House basically straight after the Stratagem tour finished. And then he goes through to talk about lots of the projects that they're thinking about doing. So it seems to me like possibly the next Alan thing we're going to get is an album, which I'll be honest, worries me a little bit. I think comedy albums from well-entrenched characters Are they often good? Maybe not.
I think even when they're funny, they've got a very limited shelf life. I think they tire very quickly.
It's not gonna, I wouldn't imagine it bearing repeat listens. But anyway, I'm sure we'll discuss Alan and his musical output in this series more anyway. And yeah, he's generally talking about how what they're able to do with Alan over the years is they are now able to react to events and the news cycle, and reacting to cultural changes keeps the character fresh, which I think we would agree is definitely a thing which has been happening in the kind of Gibbons era of Alan. They were asking Coogan about if they'd ever do a quiz show in the style of Skirmish. Coogan says they had considered it, but it just for many reasons it wouldn't really work and make sense. And then Coogan goes on to talk about they have an Alan bucket, basically like a bucket of ideas of things they haven't used. Something he's keen to do is interviews with real people. So that feels a bit like a Mrs. Merton type idea, perhaps. And also, he very briefly mentions after the album there might be a book. He also talks about wanting to do a documentary series going around Britain, investigating what it is to be British in the 21st century. So whether that is the version of And Did These Feet, that kind of historical documentary, maybe not that, but I'm not quite sure if that tallies up with the other projects that they've talked about possibly happening over the years. And it's also what I thought was interesting. Steve talked about doing the live shows of Alan. They deliberately make the comedy quite broad. So, you know, in theory, Stratagem is deliberately written for a broader audience than something like The Oast House. And Steve says that doing The Oast House is more liberating because they could be more esoteric, self-indulgent, more obscure. They thought when they did series one of Oast House, they thought that most people wouldn't like it. Also some interesting revelations in terms of how they record it. So Steve records them all at home, so he doesn't like going to a studio to do them. And the soundscapes are real. So if there's an episode where Alan's in a car, he is in a car. I mean, he's not driving, but he is in a car. He really was in a river when they did the wild swimming episode as well. I mean, again, I think he probably wasn't swimming. He was probably just standing in a river. But
it is funny you say that, though, because as I was listening to those, that thought did genuinely cross my mind. Mm. I have thought about it before when you hear the sort of sound effects that I had assumed that they were probably not library but bespoke recordings, but that is a man in a river, not Steve in a river. But I can sort of see that Steve's probably quite committed to stuff like that, that he wants to do it. He wants to do it right, and he wants to be the one sort of making the sounds as well.
And he gives a bit of reasoning for this. He talks about that if you listen to a Radio 4 drama, you can tell that it's a Radio 4 drama. You can tell that there's a Foley artist doing these things. They kind of want to avoid that. But what I thought was great, he does a bit of an impression of a Radio 4 drama, and immediately it sounds like him doing his Hannigan play from Mid-Morning Matters. And also, obviously, with it being an Empire Film podcast, Chris Hewitt asks him about Alpha Papa a little bit. And Steve just talks about when they started shooting, it just wasn't ready. So after the first week of shooting, they scrapped it all. Every evening they were doing rewrites. I mean, we kind of know this already anyway, but it was interesting to hear Steve talk about it, basically saying that the rewrites and the reshoots were so intense, it was the hardest he's ever worked. He then talks about he's going to be working on films next, because if all he did was Alan, he'd be in a lunatic asylum. I think that's fair. We kind of know how you feel there, Steve. bit of chat from, because so Chris Hewitt was interviewing Steve Coogan on his birthday, Chris's birthday, not Steve's, and he just kind of points out, I've never done anything around Alan's birthday. And they obviously talk about the fact that Alan's age over the years has become a bit fluid as him and Steve get closer together in real age. So they started it with Alan being 10 years older than Steve, but that gap has reduced. Coogan says they consider Alan to be early 60s, but they don't want to be too specific on it. But of course, I think technically he should be, I think, 65 this year, I think we worked out. Or was it 65 last year? I can't remember. But anyway, basically, they want to keep that a bit fluid now. So it's somewhere between 60, 65. And also, he did talk about, there are a few references to the fact that they do constantly now have to refer back to Alan's timeline, and the fact that they employ an archivist, which we also know. So yeah, I think in a kind of 20, 25 minute interview, there's a lot of interesting stuff about not only Steve's work, but also like the world of Alan. So yeah, really good chat.
So, time to get to the bulk of today's episode, starting with episode 7, or chapter 7, Time Travel. Nick, I believe you've got the synopsis for this one.
Yes. So, after being teased by some council workers while speedwalking through the park, Alan reflects on the death of his dog and ponders the possibility of going back in time. That is a synopsis. I like that Seldom isn't even credited by his name. He's just called his dog.
It's very my assistant for Liv, yeah. Isn't it? so we open with some music, and Oboe, the saddest of the woodwind family, according to Alan, unlike the breathless titter of the flute or the flatulent honk of the bassoon. he then gets quite caught up talking about the sexiness of saxophone music, doesn't he?
It is quite sexy, the sax, though. I do think that's fair that it is a sexy. Yeah.
So you'd agree that it? Would you agree that it sounds sexy? But would you agree that it looks sexy too?
I think it looks. I want to say interesting, but I wouldn't say sexy.
I like that he sort of has to correct himself when he starts talking about how sexy the saxophone's nipples are.
Yeah.
Once he starts framing it in terms of men's genitalia, he gets quite concerned. I've also just got the note, wet wipes, jug of orange squash here. Hopefully someone can offer some context.
It's basically the perfect accompaniment for lovemaking. So,
gentle lovemaking.
Yeah. Okay,
that's
gentle.
Very, very, very important.
I think I've got the full list here, actually, the perfect accompaniments to gentle lovemaking. So fat candle, again, we talked about this. Yeah. Fat candles, fat socks, fat armchairs, everything's fat. Fat candle, jug of orange squash, flat pack of wet wipes, and if you want to go this far, a post-it note with the name and number of your next of kin. I think if you're in your early to mid-60s, that may be crucial. That choice is yours.
If the lovemaking risks moving out of the gentle category, always have your next of kin to hand. So he talks about people being eagle-eyed, but for ears, keen-eared, bat-eared. I mean, is there a correct equivalent of being eagle-eyed for ears? Bat-eared isn't the one, is it?
No. I don't know what it is. Could it? I mean, eagle. It probably. I don't think eagles have ears, do they?
Make sense that, I mean, keen-eared is a thing. You could say you're keen-eared.
Let us know. Let us know. If someone will know. Someone will write in.
We'll throw this one out to the audience.
Let us know.
I like that he uses a 34-year-old listener who is a gay lady as proof that he has a young listenership, and it's not just all old people. And he also confesses to being an ick a bit lonely.
Yeah, I did enjoy that.
This is a bit of a Partridge thing, isn't it? That whenever he's talking about kind of his feelings or being vulnerable, he has to sort of cadge it in like a patois of some kind, or sort of just sort of, I don't know, just kind of.
You can't just say it as a straight thing.
Exactly, his cadence gets very sort of cutesy.
It's like he's trying to not engage with the emotional gravitas of it by doing it in a silly voice.
Yeah, and I think this is very much a kind of a trait of a generation of men who are unable to talk about their feelings and have to do it in a way that kind of disarms people or to themselves doesn't like Tom says, doesn't really truly address the issue.
It is quite a recurrent trope as well. I feel like they surface this fairly frequently, that he's feeling down, he's not feeling his best, he's not feeling great, he's talking to someone, and we'll come on to this. But I think just generally speaking, with newer Alan projects, his kind of mental health and mental well-being is often used as a subject for, you know, the narrative of these kinds of things. Mm.
Yeah, definitely. Like I've talked about, the kind of maudlin Alanist, you've got. Yeah, it's there's more to it even than him being a bit maudlin. There are the mental health issues are lurking in the backdrop to all of this. Yeah,
I mean they always have been with Alan, haven't they?
Well, I mean, yeah, to a certain extent, yeah, I guess so. Just quickly before we dive back in. Would we agree that the beginning of this episode, is he in the Oast House? Am I giving Oast House a tick for this? I don't think he talks about where he is, but is it safe to assume?
I'm prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, yeah, unless if he's audibly elsewhere, like when he's out on the walk later on, I think we can give this another tally for Oast.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
been a while since we had a Grant Shapps reference, isn't it? Starting to feel them
getting,
dry up.
Getting worried he's going to lose the battle for not wall space, tick space. So that's Oast 3, Shapps 3.
He's trying not to let the ribbing he got from the council workers while he was speed walking get him down, reminding himself that they're just people who mow grass and pick up shit. It's not exactly Monty Don.
I really enjoyed the build on this, though, that we find out that when Alan used to take Seldom out in the park, He was basically carried on a big gurney. Skateboard on a gurney.
Yeah, but it is great, isn't it? Because with every elaboration, it gets funnier. The idea that Seldom has to go on be towed on a skateboard is funny enough. Then you find out it needed bicycle wheels. then you find out it's less of a skateboard and more just like a gurney. Yeah. It's effectively a trailer at this point, isn't it?
And Seldom went to defend Alan's honour by chasing the park workers, but actually Alan suspects it might be because one of them was holding a sandwich.
Sandwich aside, the thing about this that was just delicious was when the council workers hid in the pickup and one of them wet themselves. That's the real delicious treat for Alan.
But not the urine.
Not the urine.
Can I also add that there was a line just before this when Alan's talking about speed walking, which I thought was really a great visual. Alan describes speed walking that it looks like you're trying to get to a campsite toilet after eating some old ham.
Yeah, very specific. That sounds like something that's happened to him on a campsite.
He's been through it, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I think this is the point that we get to something that we discussed on a previous episode, the biggest continuity error of the series so far, namely that Alan says that his dog owning days are over. Even though he talked about a replacement for Seldom in the previous episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just a straight up error, we think.
Yeah. And I personally, we're coming into a section that I hugely enjoyed. So we get more insight as to the sorts of things that Seldom likes to eat. So we find out that by his own
this
admission...
This is brilliant, yeah.
By Alan's own admission, Seldom's diet was effed up. Because he basically loved eggs and beef, which at that point, this is kind of like the skateboard thing, that if the joke stopped there, that would be great. But no, it goes further. And apparently, this is brilliant, he enjoys a salad bowl full of Coca-Cola.
I've never seen a dog belch.
Specifically Coca-Cola as well. Yeah. He tried to give him Ventimans. It did not go well.
Oh, yeah. That image.
He put his paw on his foot and then shook his head as if to say, don't do that again, mate.
I thought that was so... You can really visualise that, especially with the salad bowl full of... Still salad bowl.
Salad bowl full of Coke.
I also think there's some layers of humour here where like you realise that actually none of what Seldom eats... is Seldom's fault. Like, surely this is stuff Alan's chosen to give him, but then you think, actually, there is a bit of an element of this power dynamic that Seldom gets what Seldom wants.
Absolutely. Seldom is fully in charge of his diet, I think.
We should talk about Alan's therapist, not therapist. There's a chap he sees every Wednesday.
Jeff? Oh, no, it's Jez, isn't it? But he doesn't like the name Jez.
Yeah. Primarily seeing him because he's got into the sort of funk where he doesn't pull off at green traffic lights. He waits to be beeped, which is, you know, you can read a lot between those lines, I think.
Yeah, and he's obviously going off kind of trying to explain. He's going, does that make sense? Does that make sense? And again, that's the thing. If you take the humour away from this, basically it's a huge admission from Alan that he is basically depressed. The fact that we get a bit of an elaboration that there is a chap that he talks to every Wednesday morning, I thought this is quite interesting because in series one, there are a couple of quite brief references. He says, I think in series one, he said, the man I sometimes pay to chat to, and there was no elaboration on that. So, you know, it's at this point we're actually getting the full insight into what's going on there.
He's prepared to admit that the chap is officially a counsellor, but also likes to think of him as a sounding board. And there's a bit where Alan talks about that he suspects that this guy's not really listening to him, whereas I think that's actually just a well-known therapist tactic. Not tactic, but you know what I mean. Like that is part of the world of therapy to encourage people to open up and elaborate is by not responding to every single thing they say. So in Alan's eyes, that just means he's not paying attention.
Yeah, and but actually, it's because he's a good therapist. About it. He says it's a generic hum noise that could mean anything, but like you say, that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
Have you guys got the quote that Alan is quite riled about, which is the bit of advice or wisdom that Jez tries to give him?
Is this the yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, and today is a present?
Today is a gift.
Today is a
today
gift.
Today is a gift, which today is why we call it the present.
Why they call it the present.
I thought the reaction to this was brilliant. Wow, that's facile. And he says he wouldn't even buy a tea towel with it on.
It's the pause. He's like, wow. that's facile, as if he's going to sort of be genuinely wowed by it. But actually, no, that is very much inspired from the mind of Live, Laugh, Love, isn't it?
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
And this is very much, I think, confounding fan expectation as well. Because I think when Alan says, wow, your first thought is, oh, he's going to be genuinely impressed by that. But actually, no, he's not that thick. You know, it's wow, that's, you know, that wow, that's facile, rubbish. Which is better, I think. The other thing I thought, and this is a real stretch, he's talking to a man he doesn't believe is very qualified about his feelings, called Jez. Is this the first Partridge Peep Show crossover?
Oh, I like it. I'm liking that a lot.
Is Alan the APU's Mad Andy?
Oh, that's good. That's good. Let's go with it. So the APU joins the PSU. Yeah, so this is like Marvel and DC, right?
Yeah. The most ambitious crossover ever known.
Peep show very much the DC of this, though, surely.
We get a quick sting now with Alan sort of doing his sort of humming, you know, vocal lines. Again, I would have wanted something better. I think we've talked about the stings holding some of the best comedy, and I'm always a bit disappointed when it's just a humming one and it's not a sort of it's fine.
I think it's quite good though, in terms of it's quite a good aping of what podcasts genuinely do. I mean, as discussed
a few years ago,
Reads Like a Fool, similar stings were heard, so you know, I think it does a job on that level. But yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's bad. It's also not particularly funny. It's just
a shame it's not a comedy sting, that's all. But it's absolutely fine for what it is.
Just to cap off Alan's relationship with Jez, he was spending £90 an hour on him, so he's decided that he now just goes for a walk and throws a stick for no one rather than spend that money.
Oh yes, because going walking is a damn sight fucking cheaper. So he's genuinely sounds quite livid about how much it costs. And and he does kind of wrap up this section with a fantasy about pulling his nose off. So it really hasn't gone that well, I don't think.
I like that as soon as he is addressing the idea of time travel, he's not thinking about the fantastical possibilities, but straight into the forms, the red tape, the bureaucracy that needs to be involved before anybody can travel through time.
I thought that was quite a good point, though. I think he's probably right. If time travel was possible, you'd have some kind of government sanction. There would be forms to fill out. I think Alan is onto something there.
So are we now, we're now at the point where we're getting feedback from listeners, aren't we, about what they would do if they could travel through time?
Well, the only note I had before that was you do have he is singing another off-the-cuff song just before this. So when he's starting his walk, he's singing Seldom I Miss You, which I thought was actually quite heart-wrenching, quite sweet.
I miss you. Seldom.
Exactly that. That's good.
Yes, but as Adam says, Alan is inviting you to give your feedback, which doesn't feel very... Alan, I feel like asking, you know, for your feedback is a sort of token gesture. I can't believe he would, you know, take note of what listeners would think.
See, I'd agree with that. However, I think the execution is perfectly Alan. The way this actually unravels in terms of how you are, what the feedback is supposed to centre around and how you're supposed to give that is great. I mean, I think basically he said this segment says we want to hear your views on what works and what doesn't within the podcast, but he provides no details on where or how listeners are supposed to rate or provide feedback.
You're just supposed to rank them, I think. I think it's just
yeah,
a ranking.
But where? On what?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not very
specific. This is like you running a poll. It makes no sense. He says, rank your favourite elements from the following. What I say, the way I say them, the speed at which I say things, music, ideas, the volume at which I say things, other, none of the above. Like, that just doesn't make sense as a thing to rank. Yeah.
And then as he goes into a different section of listener feedback or Twitter feedback, he's asking people... he's asking what people would do if they could go back in time. And I felt like this is something that basically I feel like the Gibbons use these, like they know these phone-in sections are gold. They're the best bit of Mid-Morning Matters, etc. And so I think they've just wholesale transplanted that into Oast House, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I often think these, the way these bits work in Oast House, I think I'd agree. In the TV shows... like Mid-Morning Matters, I'm Alan Partridge, etc., the interactions with callers, I think, are always highlights. I don't think these bits are necessarily great in the podcast, however, because I don't think the responses are always that funny. But I did like that he calls his Twitter followers Alanites, and he then tries to come up with some alternatives to that and just kind of abandons it. So Are we calling fops Alanites now? Is that going to catch on, do we think? Are we going to use that going forward? No.
I don't know if this is fair, but I could imagine them sitting around a writer's table, and this is quite an easy way to fill 5 minutes. I think they're good at it, and it's easy writing. I think they know what they're doing. I personally think they're funny, so I don't say that as a negative, but I do think for them it's probably... Oh, where do we go with this? Oh, we could just stick in, you know, a few Twitter listeners' feedback.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not funny. I think I'm just saying it works better when it's on TV and you have the other voice in it, I think, is what really kind of levels
out. Yeah, no, I think that's probably fair.
I think the best bit about the your feedback section is that Alan has given us a jingle to use in our future feedback episodes.
100%.
Recycle that content. So yeah, the first caller suggests that they would go back in time and give a hot meal to Jeremy Clarkson. What life would look like if they hadn't signed with Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a very light nibbling of the hand that feeds you when your podcast's going out on Audible.
Yeah. And I think, Alan says that it's a great idea for a science fiction novel. What if Top Gear was still presented by the holy trinity of Clarkson, Hammond and May? So he then talks about the kind of ripples in time in terms of what the genuine current presenters of Top Gear would then be doing. And the thing I really picked up on here was, what would McGuinness be doing? Perhaps more adverts for gambling firms. And so I've done a little bit of research into Steve Coogan and Paddy McGuinness, and they do not get on.
Ooh, interesting.
This is Coogan massively sticking the knife in here. It feels like there's no love lost here. So I'll just reference two articles I found. It's interesting. The first one is from 2008. The second one is from 2021. So it's a long-running rift. So from the Bolton News in 2008, Paddy says he hates Steve Coogan. Paddy McGuinness has said that fellow comedian Steve Coogan, who appeared at the MEN Arena last night, is one of only two people he dislikes. He said that the Alan Partridge star had proved the adage "never meet your heroes" to be true. This is a quotation. "He's not a nice bloke, and I'm not afraid to say that," said McGuinness, adding that he just looks through you and that Coogan will only talk to A-list movie stars. McGuinness, who shot to fame in Peter Kay's Phoenix Nights before starring with his pal in Max and Paddy's Road to Nowhere, said the only other person he disliked was Suggs. that really cracked me up, like the ending to the article. And then in 2021, from The Mirror, Top Gear host Paddy McGuinness recalls disappointing meeting with idol Steve Coogan. And I think essentially this is a retelling of what we talked about in 2008. In a new interview, presenter Paddy McGuinness has admitted that meeting comedian and Alan Partridge creator Steve Coogan many years ago left him disappointed and let down. Top Gear presenter Paddy admitted he felt let down by the encounter, and the experience taught him a valuable lesson. The Bolton-born star confessed that meeting his idol was nothing like what he expected, and it spurred him on to always be aware of how he treats fans and aspiring entertainers now he's a household name. Paddy writes about meeting Steve in his new memoir, My Lifey. What a title. So yeah, I think that's very much it's a Coogan no. It's kind of an Alan no as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Do they dislike each other though, or is this one kind of subpar encounter turned into a decade long?
Well, I think it is one subpar encounter, but I think it's something that Paddy McGuinness has basically dined out on for the best part of 20 years.
Yeah,
so,
clearly.
Yeah.
I do think it's fair to say that Alan probably lusts after the glory days of Top Gear, when you didn't have audience members in a warehouse and cars hanging from the roof, and it was just the Holy Trinity driving around roads really quickly, and you know, they were just better times.
Well, that's almost the Holy Trinity, which should have been Clarkson, Quentin Wilson and Tiff Nadell, right?
Yeah,
the real glory days, proper Top Gear.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the bait and switch of the next tweeter saying that he would go back before his affair, put things right, yeah. And then followed up by, "You just buy another sim." Yes. And password protect the pictures.
It's basically he just wants to do an affair but do it better. He's learned his mistakes.
I do think as well, I've noticed this quite a lot in this kind of this run of episodes. I think there's a lot of very deliberate misdirection, which is always, the payoffs are always very good. You think it's going to go one way, but oh no.
Quite a bit of misdirection coming up as he starts talking about Anne of Cleves, and you think there might be a joke in there, but no, it goes on for ages and it's not very funny.
They really misdirected you there, didn't they? I also made a note that one of the other messages he had in from Victoria in Manchester, who's the one who thinks he was literally time travelling and thought he was literally robbing a bank. when he's talking about that, he was given advice the best way to rob banks with a hammer. He then goes on and lists all the different types of hammer. Now, that also happened in Oath House Series 1, didn't it?
Yeah.
If in doubt, just recycle.
In episode one, the opening of episode one as well.
So there's a brief bit about Alan went on a date with someone from Germany.
Well, I feel like he was basically catfished. I think this is where it sort of leads in from, that he was maybe not catfished, but essentially spent a night in a hotel in Dover, which didn't sound like the most romantic thing you could do. Luckily for him, it had a twin room. And at the end of the two nights, or at the end of the trip, I think the woman said, "So should I go back to my husband?" And Alan just said, "Yeah, probably." Which...
But the crucial thing is that he actually had quite a good weekend because he watched loads of Death in Paradise.
Yeah. It was winter.
He said he'd definitely do it again. Just but on his own in a B&B with Death in Paradise.
Now, if there's one person who has watched Death in Paradise in this podcast, my money would be on Nick. Surely you've watched Death in Paradise.
I haven't seen it.
It's exactly your level.
It's Benidorm
mixed with Poirot.
Yeah, and that sounds good to me. So I will watch it. I just wonder if that might
be a bit of you as well, actually, Stab. You do love a bit of Poirot, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
You love Poirot.
But more the Poirot than the Benidorm. So a dog has taken Alan's stick, and then there's a quite awkward moment where he has to basically admit that there is no other dog, it's just his stick, and he wants it back.
And this is a great callback to the Ramble episode in Oath House Series 1 as well. Excuse me, I think your dog's taking my dog's stick.
Yeah.
Yes. And also it revealed that Alan doesn't actually know what kind of dog Zeldin was.
Yeah. He might be prehistoric.
And then I quite like this is a new bit of cadence for Alan. He doesn't often say things in this voice, but when he's like, "Fucking hell, his breath stinks," like that about the other dog.
I also had a note here that this bit is big Nick energy.
The episode ends with the Blow His Mind song, doesn't it?
Yeah, which comes out of, yeah, I mean, yes, okay, you've had a bit of King Henry VIII chat, but it still comes a little bit out of nowhere, doesn't it? I don't know if they're trying to, as you've touched on before, sort of maybe just sample or trial a couple of new things at the end, fill out an episode that's about a minute short.
I can't believe my memory's this bad, but I thought that I'd heard this as a stratagem, but I guess this wasn't actually a song in the set, was it?
It is in the style
of those songs, so I wonder if this is a song that they were thinking about developing for the live show, didn't put it in, but thought actually it's a funny enough concept that we can put, you know, a minute of it in the podcast.
I think there's a few interesting things about this, because obviously I think, you know, the narrative conceit here would be that this is one of these songs he's worked on with Nathan, which obviously that has kind of been teed up across the series, that he is working on these kind of little musical asides with Nathan. But it would make more sense if you had almost some kind of voiceover from him saying, "Oh, and to close this week's episode, here's a bit of music I've been working on," or something to just give it a bit of contextualising that feels like it makes sense, because it does feel like it comes out of nowhere. I mean, I think the other link is the reason that this is in this episode in particular is, I mean, it's not a great link, but the time travel thing is obviously why this is in this episode. But yeah, I feel like they could have done a little bit of a voiceover thing just to tee this up an intro, which would have just made it make a bit more sense.
I think throwback-wise as well, it's almost thematically reminiscent of Blackbird's song in Mid-Morning Matters as well, where you're sort of taking these like theoretical ideas trying to decide, you know, what the effect
would
be
without tax. It's complicated.
Exactly.
Said Gary Barlow.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
What if you could get Gary Barlow to pay all of his tax? It'd blow his mind, etc.
We've done a rewrite. This is good. I mean, we've talked about the dog inconsistency between this episode and the previous one. But I mean, it's worth, I think, just the clarity on the line he says is, "I'm not prepared to get a new dog as I'm still very sad about my old dog." So it's very, very clear that he doesn't have a new dog in this episode. So we've discussed it a lot. Is it an unreliable narrator? Is it an inconsistent narrator? Is it Stephen the Gibbons just not caring? we don't know the answer, but you know, it couldn't be clearer that it doesn't make sense.
I definitely don't think it's an unreliable narrator, because
I don't think so.
There's no humour in him saying he hasn't got a dog when he has, or vice versa. And I just don't think he'd forget if he did or didn't.
And then also, but of course, he does end the episode by saying, "I'm going to get a dog. I'm going to get a new dog. I'm going to rescue. I'm going to get a rescue. I'm going to rescue it from a pet shop with money."
That's brilliant. And probably a great place to leave chapter 7, time travel, and move on to chapter 8, Katrina. So I've got the synopsis for this one.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Alan's online search for love has so far proved fruitless, but could Mrs. Wright be someone closer to home? So it's a bit of a rough and ready start, this one. It sounds like a bit of a ramshackle beginning to the pod. He says he's going to cast his next podcast.
And I think we can. We're not giving a tick to the Oast House here. This all takes place in the car, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And did we get a Shaps mention? Can't remember. We'll see if that comes up. But I don't think we do. So I think we might be on 3-3. Yeah.
Am I right to think that this was going to be a live haircut episode?
Yes.
I personally, not to sort of spoil thoughts too much, but I think that could have made for a funnier episode than what we actually get. I think there's a lot of humour in Alan getting a haircut. This is actually my favourite episode of the series so far.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Even more than the idea of a live haircut from conception and initial ideas all the way through to a sit down with the stylist and manager about where it went right or maybe didn't go quite so well. I like that even in his sort of imagined concept for this live haircut episode, there has to be a sort of post-mortem afterwards, so it's inevitably going to go wrong.
Yeah,
to the point that he has to have that discussion.
His imagination always fails him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I particularly liked part of his recording plan was including my thoughts on how she's getting on. So the fact that he would be live narrating it going, that bit's not very good. Yeah, I think that would have been a great episode also.
Yeah.
There's another nice little Alan not even a mispronunciation, but he describes it as being from the heart of your pants rather than the seat of your pants. And then there's
and
a lovely
the
bit
of your mouth, yeah,
and the seat of your mouth. That's it. Yeah. And then a lovely bit where he's doing much like Liz Truss has in the news at the time of recording, doing all podcasters in one fell swoop by suggesting that he could put himself up for a British Podcast Award if such a thing exists.
Which it does.
But then saying, why would you want to do that? Because it would basically be like those people, an FAQ, that put their hand up and say, oh, actually, it's more of a comment than a question, really. But that's everyone in the room. And I think, you know, as podcasters, that's accurate, isn't it?
And Tom, I believe you're the only one of us who has been to the podcast awards here.
Can you confirm
if that's what it's like?
I just had a really great time and everybody there was lovely, but we'll just leave it at that.
It sounds unbearable.
And also, you can vote for us at the People's Choice Awards next year, because you can vote for any podcast on that. So, yeah.
Anyone got a note of why Alan no longer drinks coffee on an empty stomach? This tickled me.
Oh, yes, because he briefly went berserk at a Channel 4 pitch meeting.
And oh, started to and rap. Tried to do it as a rap.
Rapped his whole pitch.
Oh, I thought that was great. I loved it.
We spoke a bit recently about how Alan can't sort of talk about his feelings in a straightforward way. He has to kind of catch it in some sort of weird, you know, some other dialect or, you know, kind of use slang. So he starts to do that when he's talking about trying to settle down. He says he just can't find the right gal, someone to spend his goddamn life with, you know. So yeah, I thought that was fun.
Yeah, I also thought this is quite interesting. So he's decided he's found the woman he wants to spend the rest of his life with. But yeah, like, she at this point, she is not aware of that. And he's on a way to tell her, so he is essentially in pursuit of her as well. It's so
the big romantic gesture.
Yeah, and you get this whole segment about how certain things are no longer acceptable in the Me Too era. So he talks about the milk tray man. There's also a bit when he talks about when she's in the ensuite having a shower or a poo. but particularly, you know, he talks about running after a woman now on a busy high street is unacceptable across the board. My note is, but Alan thinks pursuit in a car is fine.
Yeah, good point.
Also, I don't know how the timelines for this are supposed to tally with stratagem, but it wasn't that long ago he was making an even bigger grand emotional gesture to try and win the heart of a lady that saw him perform it in arenas all around the country. So he doesn't seem to have learned his lesson.
Sounds about right for Alan, though, doesn't it? So yeah, are we at Sarah's wedding at this point? And quite a long fantasy segment from Alan again here.
It's quite extended, isn't it?
I really like this bit.
Oh, really? I think it really outstays its welcome.
I'll
let you sell it to us then.
Well, I just like the little bits. Like, I actually think it's quite... Obviously, it would be terrible and would never work as a film. It's just basically all those cliched rom-com tropes.
So it would work as a film because he'd basically taken things from loads of films that have been massively successful. Any rom-com you could think of.
Okay, I'll rephrase that.
I'll rephrase that.
It would never work as a film that I would want to see because of all of those.
Fine. I'll accept. Yeah.
Because all of those romantic tropes. But I do really like it's time to play the music. And then he walks out and then, hang on a sec. It's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. It's time to... What's the rest of the... I can't remember.
Down to the Muppet Show tonight.
Muppet Show tonight. I just really like that. I thought that was quite... And then the bit where it's just like, well, why didn't you say the whole thing, you fucking cunt, at the end of the...
Oh, yeah.
I had that in my notes.
The bit where he's like, I just remembered. What? Why I love you. Yeah. why didn't you say the whole thing at the start?
I had in my notes, I wasn't 100% sure if you called her a stupid cow or a stupid cunt, but I think it is cunt, isn't it?
It is definitely cunt.
Brilliant. It's definitely...
And that just really, really made me laugh, that payoff at the end. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think I'm a little bit between Stab and Nick here. Like, I think it's just a little bit overlong, but I do like this kind of discontinued character trait we're seeing, where he does go off on these long kind of fantasies. It's basically like he's got a load of like in development film scripts in his head that he'll just delve into as he just goes off on one whilst he's recording a podcast.
Well, we know from series one he's got a lot of film
exactly,
scripts
yeah,
in
yeah.
mind. Yeah,
yeah.
Although, yeah, his idea of coincidences and plot lines is pretty loose, given that he says you could not make it up about the fact that both he and Katrina own Range Rovers. another nice bit of a linguistic mess when he says he can see me slap bang in his peripheral vision.
I didn't clock that. That's great. Yeah.
And yeah, he's basically he's trying to get it let into to traffic, isn't he? And absolutely slating the guy until the guy lets him back in, and then all is immediately.
You're overthinking it, mate. Oh, he's going to let me through.
There was a bit here that I went back and listened to it a couple of times where there's a line about Charles and Camilla that I think has been re-recorded. Because obviously this was, I think timeline-wise, this was being recorded around the time that we lost Her Majesty the Queen. And I think there might have been another reference to Charles in here that's been removed for something a bit more neutral.
Okay, so what we're doing, just to line that up. So yeah, we know this basically, this whole series was recorded post-stratagem and was delivered. Basically, because we've done an audible host read for the first few weeks of this series, we do have the intel that this series was delivered to Audible on the 9th of September. And I believe, was that the day after the Queen died? Should probably remember a date like that. But this whole series would have been recorded over basically what, June, July, August, pretty much. So yeah, it is, because I think, I can't remember now whether it's this episode or another episode, but yeah, you do get a reference to Prince Charles. So obviously they haven't, they certainly haven't gone back and edited that to King Charles, that's for sure.
That's true. Yeah, I just wondered if, yeah, maybe they've removed something to take a little bit of offence out.
What's the line? Have you got it written down?
I think, you know, it's just a reference to Charles and Camilla, and I think they describe him as HRHPOW.
Right.
Yeah, but it sounds like it's replaced something else. There's another Gotta Try stand-up at this point, which obviously I've not finished the series, but I thought at some point in the Oat House, are they going to have him try stand-up? Just have him do a disastrous 5 minutes and like try and, or better still, have him spend the whole episode working up some stand-up and then bottle it at the last minute.
I mean, that was kind of something I was hoping for when we covered the first series. I was hoping that would be the payoff, kind of as an end of series moment, but it wasn't. So, well, Adam, we won't spoil it for you. We'll see how it progresses.
Sure. I like that. Obviously, we've had several mentions to Alan's dating, and you know, he is a Tinder user, and I would be very keen to see what his Tinder profile pictures would be and what his his bio would how that would read.
I imagine it's kind of all the imagery from the from Nomad. I reckon it would look men in a brown shirt.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the imagery for this series as well, though, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be a great promotional opportunity if there's ever a third series of Oast House. They've obviously added him to LinkedIn to great comic effect. Why not put him on Tinder for the next one?
I like the idea that blonde divorcees are also kind of overfished in the Tinder world as well. Stocks need to be replenished.
Blonde divorcees with tans and good hair have been overfished.
Do you think as well that he says on Tinder he sees the same old faces? Do you think that's basically Alan accidentally doing himself, in that nobody is matching with him, so he's just getting
When you're basically endlessly swiping and then you find yourself back at the beginning and you're criticising the platform, not taking a look at yourself?
There's quite a bombshell here, though. Carol knows that Alan uses Tinder. So I'm not really sure what we're learning about their relationship there, apart from they are obviously still in touch. Because he also says that she's too analog and that she's more likely to be looking for love on P&O cruises.
So she's also single, which is notable as well. Although I suddenly thought, would that be a rekindling? But then probably not, since he then describes her as like spent uranium rods, never not toxic.
Which was great.
I think we then get the mini bombshell here that obviously Nathan, we know the jingles for radio and now for Alan's show in his early 20s, and it's revealed that Nathan's mum is the target.
Now, I thought, I don't know, did you guys find this was quite a good example of what I thought quite deliberate misdirection here? Because the way this segment starts, Alan is talking about looking everywhere for love, basically. And then the next thought, the next line from him is, there's a young chap in his 20s called Nathan. So I was like, oh, so is Alan about to kind of make some kind of declaration that he's dating a 20-year-old boy or something like that? Or is the conceit that, you know, he's talking about looking for love and he's immediately started talking about this 20-year-old boy, is that where his mind has gone without realising it? But obviously, no, deliberate misdirection. He wants to date his mum. I don't know. Did you guys kind of fall into any of those traps at all?
I did not on that one.
No, I must admit, I didn't either, to be honest.
Okay, well, I didn't. It's good writing.
I certainly didn't see it coming that it was Nathan's mum was the object of his affections. But I liked the little bit that he put in around that ultimately, if you want to get swipes, then you have to have a tan and be carrying some sort of rope over your shoulder because people love brown mountain climbers.
Yeah. We get a bit more detail about Katrina here, don't we, that she is fiercely apolitical, but she did campaign for Brexit, and also that she refused to clap for carers because they get paid, don't they?
And then Alan stopped clapping.
Yeah.
Which I thought was also quite nice.
She also doesn't say please often.
Yeah.
I mean, she sounds awful.
Imagine Liz Truss.
She's not awful. She decodes lady bullshit.
that is a good section. Do you want to run through that?
Yeah. So it's,
and smells great when she lays off the fags.
This one uses emojis in her profile. She's probably thick. This one mentions her divorce twice. Imagine how many times she's going to mention it in person. What are the other ones?
This one likes yoga, so she probably doesn't drink.
Yeah.
And I think there's one more. Anyone? Okay, this one's looking for a gentleman. That means she'll expect you to pay.
Yeah, very, very good. And when she lays off the fag, she smells great. And then possibly the line that makes me laugh the most in this entire series so far is, and it's just very, very simple. It's just, imagine Liz Truss.
Yeah. Yeah. So good.
We're left forever waiting for the conclusion of that sentence, but there is none.
I've listened to this episode like 3 or 4 times and still that line absolutely does me.
Yeah, I mean, what can we give the full context as well? Because before that, you get like a more right-wing Kirsty Allsop, but with lemony hair. So yeah, it's exactly that. Again, a bit more, it's almost kind of misdirection, or it's making you expect more. Imagine Liz Truss. You think you're going to get Liz Truss with,
yeah,
or Liz Truss if. But no, it's just imagine Liz Truss. And again, this is what I was saying about the timing of the writing and delivering of this episode. Like, they must be so pleased that Liz Truss won the leadership campaign.
Yeah.
Because then all the Truss gags just land so much better at this point.
Yeah.
A lovely bit of linguistic mangling just before this, when he says it's very time consuming to sort the wheat from the time wasters rather than from the chaff.
Oh, and do we need to talk about Lynn, by the way? I think there's quite a big Lynn bombshell here.
Oh, we do. What, the fact she campaigned for Rolf Harris's release?
Yes. Because she's a stunningly bad judge of character.
Yeah. Alan never liked him, but great at drawing. Really great at drawing.
He never got the wiggle board bollocks.
The reason that Lynn's a bad judge of character, that quality comes up, is because she hates Katrina, basically. So yes. there's a rivalry there. And I believe it's time for an ad to stay in a Columbus caravan, isn't it? Something that was referenced earlier in the episode where we talked about Nathan's jingles.
Oh, I've also had that jingle in my head this afternoon as well.
Come on, Stab, remind us how it goes.
I'm not singing on the podcast.
Okay, we'll just drop the voice note in that you sent us earlier then. Jed, I will send that to you right now.
Brilliant, thanks. Thanks, man, mate.
I actually had a note about when he gets out of the car. So I think it's actually just before the jingle gets played in. So he's caught up with Katrina at the, is it the garden centre?
Yeah, it's the garden centre.
Yeah. So as he gets out of the car, you hear him going, "Hey, Katrina, hey, girl," which I thought was very much like a "Hey, baby girl" in this time.
Yeah.
He's kind of doing that kind of weird American,
again, he has to,
persona.
Yeah, I think as Adam's kind of mentioned, he has to kind of, there has to be some kind of linguistic sort of styling to whatever he says whenever he's trying to say something that's, you know, slightly
sincere.
Yeah, exactly. Meaningful. Exactly. Or serious.
Hey, girl.
But I think it's also with this kind of American accent thing, this kind of trying to be like this. I think he thinks it's cool, doesn't he?
Or like debonair.
This is when Alan's trying to be a cool guy.
Yeah.
And then I think we get another kind of off mic exchange with a voiceover over the top. Again, what Nick has mentioned. Also, it reminded me a bit of when Alan makes a final approach to Zoe in Mid Morning Matters, because we never actually heard that exchange.
So he's asked her to Goodwood. Is that is it the Festival of Speed they're going to?
It is indeed.
And listener, he has to admit he was sporting an erection.
Yeah, and she'll be wearing the trousers. Which is that an implication that there's some kind of like sexual dominance to her, and that Alan will be basically
eaten alive?
I don't think it's just sexual. I think effectively Alan is set up to basically be a cuckold to this woman, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like that's the plan. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. There's also that, but also when they're away for that weekend, Alan's getting pegged, whether he likes it or not.
Hey, girl.
Do we think with the Columbus Caravans ad that that's Nathan doing the voiceover as well? So basically, Nathan is providing the advert in an episode about the seduction of his own mother.
Yeah, I think that's, I assume that's who it's supposed to be, yeah.
Yeah, and then I really enjoyed the payoff at the end of this where, surprise, surprise, it's to be continued. He has a brief negotiation with Audible about whether it could just be one long episode, but he would then have to provide an extra episode as part of his contract, so he will be splitting it in two.
Smart.
Now, Adam, I know you haven't finished the series. How far have you got?
Only to this episode. I'm very excited to see what happens.
I would also say that's the same for me as well. I've not heard anything past
Okay,
this.
In that case, No further spoilers. Yep. And
yeah, I mean, I'm not saying anything. I would say
looking at the synopsis of episode 9, which we'll be covering
yeah,
next time,
you've seen all this
that there's that this probably won't be the full blossoming of a relationship with Katrina that we've been led to believe by the end of this episode. Let's say.
What you mean? You think she might not be a brand ambassador?
I think Alan might be onto other things by the time we get 5 minutes into the next episode. But let's see. So unless anyone's got anything to add on Katrina or time travel, that's all we've got this week on Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. If you've got thoughts about From the Oast House or Alan in general, you can catch us on Instagram at Monkey Tennis Pod, Twitter at The Partridge Pod, Facebook.com/The Partridge Pod, email thepartridgepod@gmail.com. Monkey Tennis hotline is 07923 600 017, or if you're enjoying what you're hearing and you'd like to chuck us a few pounds, you can do that to the value of a price of a cup of coffee on ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. We'll be back next week with episode 9, Brand Ambassador, and episode 10, Alpha Male. But for now, from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, thanks and goodbye.
Open up your horizons with caravans from Dryson's.
Great, that saved me having to send a voice note file to Jed, so thanks.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle. Aha!
Yep, absolutely.
Monkey Tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey Tennis?
Little pierce my foot on the spike.
With a chuckle.
No.
Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey Tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Okay. Monkey Tennis?
Edmonds is a total wazzard of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Back of the net.
Monkey Tennis?
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.